Chapter 7. The three men, gathered together solely to gain riches, had never been real friends. They had in common only business relations. That they had combined their forces and brains and resources for no other reason than to make high profits was the factor which had prevented them from becoming true friends. As it was, this proved to be the advantage of their work. Friends, really good friends, kept together by business and forced upon each other without any contact with other people, more often than not, part the bitterest of enemies. They were not even real pals. Each was only looking for his proper share, and if a grain more seemed to be going to another partner, battle was on at once and without quarter. The common worries, labor, disappointments, the common hopes, made them comrades in a sort of war. More than once one had saved the life of another. Several times Dobbs had endangered his own safety to fetch either the old man or Curtin when one fell into a ravine or into a chasm or was caught in thorny underbrush on a steep rock. Help in dangerous situations had been rendered to Dobbs by the others. Still, none of them ever believed that such assistance was given or that sacrifices were made out of pure kindness. Each of them felt that this service was rendered because, had one of them lost his life, the other two could not have worked the field alone. Just as soldiers, personally unknown to each other, but belonging to the same nationality or to that of allied armies, will help their fellow soldiers not alone for patriotic reasons, but for many other reasons, which may, often, be very difficult to explain in detail. Under such circumstances, mutual service usually leads to lasting friendship, but it did not work that way among these three. One day Dobbs was inside a tunnel where earth was being extracted. While he was there, the tunnel broke down, burying him. Howard, digging on the opposite side, did not know what had happened. Just then Curtin returned from hauling water from the brook below with the help of the burrows. Looking at the tunnel, he found it strange that he did not hear any movement nor see a flicker of light from the lantern Dobbs was using. He knew then instantly that Dobbs was buried. He did not even take time to notify Howard, as he thought it might be too late then to bring Dobbs out alive. He went in, although the ceiling was hanging so that it might come down any second and bury the rescuer as well. He got Dobbs out and then called for the old man, for Dobbs was unconscious and had to be brought to, and Howard knew what to do in such accidents. After Dobbs had regained his senses, he realized what Curtin had done for him and what risk he had taken to get him out.
"Thanks, you guys," he said, grinning. "If you had wanted only to spit on your hands, it would have been all over with me. Tell you, I heard the harps playing, sure enough."
Then they went to work again. That same night, sitting by the fire cooking their meals, Dobbs began to think. After they had eaten, he looked at his partners suspiciously.
"What are you staring at, you mug?"
Curtin asked. "I was just thinking, why the hell you fellers dragged me out of that hole? Your shares would have grown rather big if you'd left me where I was for 5 minutes longer." Dobbs narrowed his eyes as he spoke.
"Guess you're still hearing harps and seeing white robes."
Howard tried to ridicule him. "You can't catch me sleeping." Dobbs answered. "Don't you ever believe that I'm not so dumb as you two guys think me. I've got ideas of my own, and I stick to them. That's what. Now shake your cock with that mixture handed you, dirty-minded crooks that you are and always will be."
"Another crack like that from you, and I'll sponge your face, you devil."
Curtin spoke angrily.
"Who'll sponge whose face?"
Dobbs jumped to his feet.
"Now peace here, babies. No use breaking your knuckles and shins. We need them, and badly at that."
Howard's fatherly tone quieted them. He had touched the right spot. Nothing was worth more to them than their working ability. To remind them of the fact was always the best balm the old man had in store for their quarrels.
"Of course, you great-grandfather. You're too yellow to fight. You're even afraid to see a fight. You might faint if you saw a bleeding nose."
Dobbs, still standing, forgot about Curtin and turned to the old man.
"Playing godfather here to us. I wonder for what reason. Someday I'll find out.
It sure will be a costly day for both of you."
Curtin had not moved when Dobbs had jumped to his feet. He had just looked about defensively.
"Don't mind him,"
he now said to Howard.
"Don't mind him at all, that's what I say. Can't you see he's screwy?"
"Mebby," Dobbs growled. "Mebby screwy. But believe me, I know why I'm screwy and who made me so.
and I'm turning in, leaving you to discuss how to give me cold feet, but I warn you, it may turn out the other way around. When he had gone to the tent, Howard said to Curtin,
Nothing new ever happens under the stars, it seems. I've seen this kind of thing occur so often and so needlessly that now I ask myself why it hasn't happened sooner in this outfit. You aren't so free from this disease either, Curdy, as you might think. There are few who are long immune from this infection. Well, I think I'll turn in, too.
Each night, the proceeds of the day's work were carefully estimated in the presence of the three partners. This done, the shares were cut, and each partner received his. This way of paying dividends was not very intelligent. Often, the earnings of the day were so small that it would have taken an expert mathematician to tell exactly how to divide it justly. It had come to be arranged this way quite accidentally, almost the first day, when there had been any earnings. Curtin was the man who had suggested it one day during the second week, after the gains had begun to accumulate.
Okay with me.
Howard agreed without arguing.
Better for me. Then I won't have to be the dragon to guard your pennies any longer. I haven't liked it too much, acting as your safety box.
Both his partners rose.
Who made you our banker? We never asked you yet to hold our well-earned money. Which means, in other words, that you wouldn't trust me?
That's exactly what it means in plain English. Dobbs left no doubt of how he judged his partner. Howard smiled at them.
That's right. You never asked me. Only I thought I might be the most trustworthy among us three.
You? How come? Dobbs could at times be nasty. Howard kept on smiling. He had had too many similar experiences in his life to feel offended.
Perhaps you're just waiting to ask me in what pen I grew up. Well, I've never been in any pen yet. I hope I never shall be. I can't expect you to believe this. Besides, never having been in jail doesn't mean that a feller plays straight and honest. Out here, there's no sense in lying to each other. After a few weeks, we'll know one another better than we could from a police record or a jail warden's report. Where we are now, you can't save yourself by tricks, no matter how smart you may think yourself in town. Here, you may tell the truth, or you may lie as much as you wish. Everything will come out sooner or later. So, whatever you may think of me, of us three, I'm the most trustworthy. As far as being the most honest, no one can say.
Dobbs and Curtin only grinned at him for an answer. Howard seemed not to mind.
You may laugh at what I say. It's true, nonetheless. Why? Because here, only plain facts count. We might charge you, Dobby, with taking care of the goods. Suppose I'm somewhere deep in the bush to get timber, and suppose, at the same time, Curtin is on his way to the village for provisions. Wouldn't that be your big chance to pack up and leave us in the cold?
Only a crook like you would think me likely to do that. Dobbs felt hurt.
It may be crooked to say what I said, but it's surely more crooked to have such thoughts and not admit 'em. You'd be the first guy I can imagine who wouldn't occasionally nourish the idea of robbing when given a chance, to make off with all the goods. Dirty trick as it would be against your partners would seem, out here and under these conditions, rather the natural thing to do. You think, and you have thought many times of doing it, but you're too yellow to admit frankly that you've had such thoughts and that you wouldn't mind carrying them out. Now, right now, it wouldn't pay. That's the reason why you think of it only vaguely. Some day, though, when the goods will amount to, say, 300 ounces, you might get such ideas more dearly fixed in your heads. I know my fellow men, and you don't. That's the difference. If some pretty day you caught me, tied me to a tree, took all I have, and walked out on me, leaving me here in the wilderness to my fate, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, because I know what gold can do to men. And what about yourself, you wiseacre?
Asked Curtin.
It's different with me. I'm no longer quick enough on my feet. I couldn't do it hard as I might try. You'd get me by the collar in no time and string me up and even forget to bark the tree. I can't escape you. I have to depend on you in more ways than one. I can't run as easily as either of you can, and so you have the plain reason why I think I'm the most trustworthy in this outfit. Looking at it your way, I feel sure you're right.
Curtin said.
Anyway, and perhaps for your own good, Howie, it'd be better to cut the proceeds every night and each partner be responsible for his own goods. That would give each of us the greatest freedom, as each could go whenever he wished to. Right by me.
The old man agreed.
Only then, everybody has to be careful that the hiding place of his fortune is not found out by one of the others.
Hell, what a dirty mind you must have, you old scoundrel.
Dobbs cursed at him.
Not dirty, baby. No, not dirty. Only I know whom I'm sitting here with by the fire and what sort of ideas even supposedly decent people can get into their heads when gold is at stake. Most people are only afraid of getting caught, and that makes them not better, but only more careful and more hypocritical. Makes them work their brains so that it would be difficult to catch them once they've run off. Here, it's no use to be a hypocrite. No use to lie. In cities, it's different. There, you can afford to use all the tricks known under heaven, and your own mother wouldn't recognize them as tricks. Here, there's only one obstacle, the life of your partner. And easy as it may seem to remove this obstacle, it may, in the end, prove very costly.
Police would find him out sooner or later. Isn't that what you mean? Asked Dobbs.
I wasn't thinking of police. Police and judges may never butt in, and most likely never would. Yet while dirty acts may never burden the conscience of a man, his mind and soul may not allow him to forget his deeds. The crime he has committed may not burden him, but the memory of happenings before the crime may make his life a hell on earth and rob him of all the happiness he tried to gain by his foul act. But, well, what's the use of talking about it? All right, have it your way. Every night the profits are cut, and each of us hides it as best he can. It would be hard anyway, as soon as we've made 200 ounces, to carry it in a little bag hanging day and night from your neck.